Ready to dive deep today? We're taking a look at insider research, particularly in education, where it can get really tricky trying to wear two hats, researcher and colleague.
Yeah, talk about a whole new level of participant observation.
Right. Today's deep dive is on this paper by a teacher who became a researcher looking at their own colleagues' experiences when their school did this huge curriculum overhaul.
Wow, being in the thick of it. And the interesting thing for you is how they dealt with being both a colleague and researcher at the same time. Those ethical lines can get really blurry.
For sure. Imagine trying to be objective about your coworkers' experiences when you're all in the same boat, staff meetings, the whole nine yards.
Exactly. And that's what makes insider research so challenging. Unlike someone coming in from outside, these researchers are already part of the scene. They've got relationships, history, shared experiences, all of which can help their research, but also make it more complicated.
It's a bit like that saying, can't see the forest for the trees. But here it's more like, can you see the forest when you help plant some of the trees and have a favorite picnic spot under one?
That's a great way to put it. It really shows the unique problems insider researchers face. They get the context in a way outsiders don't, but that same insider knowledge can also create blind spots.
A real balancing act, then. And the researcher in our source really lays it all out there, these little moments, vignettes, where the ethical lines got really fuzzy for them.
Absolutely. Those vignettes are like little windows into the day-to-day struggles of doing insider research. Like, think about just trying to recruit people when you're not just a researcher, but their friend and coworker too.
Yeah, like that part where they talk about this close colleague, someone who actually mentored them early in their career, volunteering for the study. Seems like a no-brainer at first, but...
But ethically, it raises red flags, right? Because how can you be sure that colleague, with all that shared history, feels like they can actually say no? Are they saying yes because they're genuinely interested, or because of your existing relationship?
It's like trying to untangle the research relationship from the friendship. Is it even possible to fully separate those things?
That's the million-dollar question for insider research. And it's where the usual ethical playbook, like just getting informed consent, might not be enough.
Because true informed consent means feeling totally okay about saying no without worrying about messing up the friendship or your work relationship.
Exactly. And it's a constant conversation, not a one-time thing. You're always negotiating that consent, especially as you uncover new information throughout the research.
And those complexities don't just disappear once you've got your participants, do they? It seems like collecting the data created a whole other set of problems for our teacher researcher.
Absolutely. There's this really vivid scene where they're interviewing this close colleague in their home office, a space they've been in socially loads of times before. Can you imagine trying to keep that professional distance with your colleague's family photos staring back at you?
How awkward. It'd be like trying to analyze your best friend's dream journal with a totally straight face. You can't just shut off those personal connections.
Exactly. And it's not just the physical space either. It's that insider knowledge, those assumptions you already have that can color how you interpret everything, what your colleague says, their body language, the works.
It's like trying to reread a book you've read a million times before. You might miss important details because you're so used to the story.
Exactly. The researchers even worried whether they were really digging deep enough or if knowing this person so well made them skim over things, assuming they already knew the answer.
So even with the best of intentions, knowing someone that well can be like a filter, maybe skewing your view without you even realizing it.
It's a constant tightrope walk. And it brings us to another big ethical hurdle in insider research. Confidentiality.
Oh, yeah, the fear that everyone at school will be playing guess who the second that research paper comes out.
Exactly. And it's not an unreasonable fear either. Our researcher used a fake name for their colleague, but even that wasn't enough to keep them anonymous, as we'll see.
It's tough to imagine feeling truly anonymous in that kind of situation.
You're right, incredibly difficult. Turns out, even with a fake name, there were these little details in what the colleague said, like certain phrases they use or just their way of talking.
Wait, you mean those little quirks everyone has in their speech?
Exactly. Those things stick out like a sore thumb when you know the person really well, like fingerprints. Even the researcher's supervisor picked up on it, said they thought they recognized someone just from how they were quoted.
Wow, that's unsettling. It really shows how the usual ways of protecting someone's identity in research might not be enough here.
Exactly. What works in other settings can totally fall apart in the close world of a school or workplace.
It's clear this researcher cared about protecting their colleagues. They even started presenting their findings more as this collective case study instead of singling out individual teachers.
That's a common strategy in this type of research. Help protect individual identities, but still gets at the bigger themes that came up.
Sounds like they were really walking a tightrope, balancing the integrity of the research with looking out for their colleagues.
Absolutely. And that tension is at the core of insider research. It's not just a checklist of rules to follow.
Which brings us to that idea of a virtues-based approach to ethics, which the researcher talks about, really got me thinking.
Interesting approach, isn't it? Instead of just focusing on what you can or can't do, it's about cultivating these character traits that guide how you act.
So less about rule book, more about your own internal compass.
Exactly. Developing those inner qualities that help you make good choices, even in those gray areas where there's no easy answer.
The researcher specifically mentioned courage, respectfulness, sincerity, humility, reflexivity. Fascinating how those play out in a research context.
They really do. Like courage, for example. It takes guts to address those power imbalances head on. Imagine having to ask your close friend, who's also in your study, if they're truly okay answering a question, or if they're just trying to please you.
Oof, tough conversation to have. Much easier to just avoid it.
Right. But courage there means having those hard conversations, setting boundaries, even if it risks your personal relationship, all for the sake of ethical research.
And then respectfulness feels especially key when it's your own colleagues you're researching.
For sure. Respect in research means treating colleagues as equals, not just sources of data. It's about valuing their views, being open to being challenged, and knowing that you don't have all the answers just because you're familiar with the setting.
What about sincerity? I'm guessing that ties into being upfront about the research process and not downplaying any risks.
Spot on. It's about being honest with your colleagues about what the research involves, what participating really means, and being honest with yourself about any blind spots you might have because of your connection to the people in the study.
So, no persuading your buddies to sign up or nudging them towards the right answers.
Exactly. Everyone needs to feel like they have a choice, even when it's your friend.
Okay. Starting to see how these virtues all work together for a more ethical way of doing research, where does humility fit into this?
Humility is crucial. It's about admitting that being an insider doesn't mean you know everything. It's realizing your colleagues have insights that might surprise you.
It's about accepting that you could be wrong, even about your own workplace or the people you work with.
Exactly. It's recognizing your own limits and being open to learning. Which leads us to that final virtue reflexivity.
Which is all about self-reflection.
Yes. Taking time to examine your own reasons for doing this, your biases, your assumptions, being real with yourself about the fact that you might not be seeing the whole picture.
So taking a step back to analyze your own research process and being brutally honest about what you find, even if it's not pretty.
Exactly. Reflexivity reminds us that as insider researchers, we're not robots. We bring all our experiences and biases to the table. And pretending otherwise isn't just dishonest, it's ethically irresponsible.
So it's not about chasing some perfect objectivity, which is probably a fantasy anyway. It's more about owning your own perspective and using it responsibly.
Right. It's recognizing that your perspective is valuable to the research, but you also have to be super aware of your own biases.
And I imagine that's even tougher when you're also trying to deal with all the normal workplace stuff, like our teacher researcher was.
Absolutely. It's like juggling different roles. One minute you're a colleague, the next you're a researcher. And those lines can get so blurry, it creates these ethically tricky situations.
The researcher even mentions this moment during an interview with their colleague where they almost slipped up and started giving their own opinion about something that happened at a staff meeting. Talk about an insider impulse.
Right. Shows how easily those personal dynamics can slip in, even when you're trying your best to stay objective.
Really proves that reflexivity, that constant self-checking, is an ongoing thing, not a one and done. You have to be so tuned in to your own tendencies to catch those moments where your personal feelings might be coloring your research.
Couldn't agree more. It's about constantly checking in with yourself, questioning your assumptions, being willing to admit when you might need to switch up how you're doing things.
So those virtues we talked about, it's not just about being a good person. It seems like they're actually essential for doing good ethical research, especially with your own peers.
Absolutely. Those virtues give you a framework for navigating those murky situations that pop up in insider research, like signposts guiding you toward more responsible decisions.
It's inspiring to see how this teacher researcher used them to handle a really complex situation. They could have easily taken the easy way out, but instead, they chose to face the ethical dilemmas head on.
And by doing that, they've given us all a lot to think about, especially anyone interested in ethical insider research. It's about finding that balance between closeness and that critical distance, between being part of the group and being able to step back and observe thoughtfully.
It's a tricky balance, but as we've seen, it's a balance worth striving for. So to wrap things up today, here's something for our listeners to chew on. If even tiny, seemingly insignificant details can risk someone's anonymity in insider research, how do we find that sweet spot between protecting the people involved and sharing valuable findings? It's a question we all need to consider because it speaks to the responsibility we have to the people and communities we're a part of.
Well said. It's a good reminder that research is never done in isolation. It's always about human relationships, and those relationships deserve our respect and care.